Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider Biz. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. For the first time, Malaysians living in four neighbouring countries will be allowed to vote as postal voters in the Johor state elections. Previously, Malaysians in southern Thailand, Singapore, Brunei and Kalimantan were not eligible as postal voters, but now they are. However, these voters will need to apply online before Friday, the 18th of February. With just days to go, has enough been done to make this initiative work effectively? Thomas Fun is the chairperson of Bersih 2.0. He joins us now. Thomas, the EC has repealed two major requirements for overseas Malaysians to qualify as postal voters. I'm just wondering whether you consider this significant.
Yes, thank you for having me, Melissa and Sharon. Yes, indeed. I think this is much a welcome opening by the EC to allow Malaysians who are living and working in the neighbouring countries like Singapore, Southern Thailand, Brunei and Kalimantan to vote by as a postal voter. This took place for the first time during the Malacca state election, then followed by the Sarawak state election, and now for Johor. So certainly, I think this has opened up access to hundreds of thousands of Malaysians who are, because of their own circumstances, forced to work or live in the neighbouring country. But I think there is still a lack of awareness of this process.
Thomas, if I understand you correctly, you said that this also applied to the Malacca and the Sarawak. Do we know enough about the kind of reception this had? I mean, how many people actually cast their votes using postal votes living outside Malacca and Sarawak elections?
I do not have the exact figure, but I was told that in Malacca there were about less than 400 postal voters received for the state election. And then for Sarawak, even less than that, less than 200 postal voters. Now, remember, this includes Malaccans or Sarawakians all over the world, not just in Singapore or neighboring countries. So that is pretty dismal. But I am pretty confident that now with greater awareness of this facility, the response for postal voting to the Johor election will be a lot more.
Hey, Thomas, I want to ask you just a very quick question. I mean, when it comes to postal voters, because of the pandemic situation, the issue isn't just people living outside of Malaysia. It is, in fact, within the Federation itself. So, in particular, suffer the pain
of going home to vote. Was that at all addressed, Sarawakians living in the peninsula or in Sabah wanting to use postal voting?
No, that wasn't addressed because up to now, Sarawakian or Sabahan living in the peninsula wanting to vote in the state election of Sarawak or even before that Sabah, they cannot do that even to today. So this apply postal voting, right, applies only to Malaysians who are living outside the country, not within the country, not even in Sabah or Sarawak. They can't apply as postal voter. But we have been calling, you know, on the EC from the very start of the pandemic to allow especially East Malaysians or those separated by the South China Sea, this facility to become postal voters simply because of the risk of traveling and also the cost of traveling across the South China Sea to cast a vote. I mean, during a pandemic, you don't want people to be moving about. But unfortunately, that has not come to pass. But we are nonetheless glad that at least the Malaysian in the neighboring countries can apply to be postal voter, because there's really no reason. They may be right. in Singapore or Brunei, but to take leave during our polling day and come back and vote is impractical a lot of time.
Well, there's only a few days left before the deadline to apply online to become a postal voter. Is there enough awareness, do you think, Thomas? You talked a little bit about, you know, communication about the process. Is there enough awareness? Do people, Malaysians living in Singapore, know that they're now eligible to vote in the Johor state elections?
You know, just no way to know for sure, but per se, we, together with several other NGOs like Undi Johor, Undi 18, and some of the political party have been pushing very hard on this Undi Post campaign right from the start a couple of weeks ago. And from the feedback that we are getting, I myself am getting, I'm pretty sure that the awareness is getting there. And I'm hoping, quietly hoping, that Johor will see at least perhaps 5,000 postal voter, or if not 10,000 postal voter coming in. And that's not impossible, because one of the things that people may not know is that Johor is different. You know, Johor being the neighbor of Singapore, we have a large population, Johorian, who are working in Singapore. Our estimate is anything between 100 to 200,000 Johorian working in Singapore, but because of the pandemic and the closure restriction at the border, many of them are stuck in Singapore. So this is extremely timely for these Johorian voters.
Thomas, maybe you can help me, because I'm not quite well versed with the process of postal voting. Maybe you can educate us a little bit. What is that process like? I mean, when say Malaysians living in Singapore receiving that ballot, what happens next? I guess I'm wondering where the challenges might arise in terms of that process.
Okay, talking about process, I think we need to step back first to apply to become a postal voter. And so what you need to do if you are a Malaysian living overseas and want to vote in the Johor election is that you have to go to the SPR website and apply to be a postal voter. And before you can do that, you have to open an account with SPR, online account. And that is, they take some verification. They need your IC, your phone number, your then after opening the account, then you can log in again to apply to be a postal voter, giving your overseas address and your passport details, and then apply as a postal voter for the Johor election. Now, with that done, and you just have to wait. So on not, you can't get your ballot, obviously, until nomination day on the 26th of February. Because only then you know who are the candidates for your constituency. So immediately after 26th February, EC will be printing out the ballots, the postal ballots for your constituency. It will take them about 2 to 3 days, and then they will mail or post that ballot to your overseas address. To your overseas address. It may take another 3 days or 4 days to reach you. And we are talking about this time, a 2 weeks campaign period, 14 days. And so hopefully you will get your ballot somewhere on within a week of this after nomination day. Then after you get the ballot, you fill in your details and you mark your choice, your candidates of your choice on the ballot, seal it, put it back into the provided envelope, and post it to the returning officer of your constituency. The address should all be there on what you received with the bill. So by posting it back, again, the concern is time. If you want to be sure, I would suggest courier it, spend a bit of money, courier it to make sure that it arrived within 2 to 3 days before polling day. So the deadline is that it must reach the returning officer before the 12th of March. And Tom, that will be the process.
Thomas, I don't mean to cast aspersion on Post Malaysia or any postal service, but this seems awfully analog in the 21st century. Surely there is a much more efficient and less costly way of ensuring that somebody's democratic franchise is protected.
Yes, I agree with you. You know, I mean, it's pretty archaic. And, you know, still going by snail mail and by printed ballot paper and all these things. Obviously, the ideal that we would like to work towards is e-voting, you know, e-voting or i-voting, whereby since you have created an account with SPR, with the EC, it is conceivable that you could also log into the same account on polling day or a few days before polling days, and then cast your ballot or select the candidate for your constituency. So that, I would say, will be the ideal that EC should be working towards. But I understand their caution, because when it comes to voting, it is something that is extremely sensitive. Even if there is a slight suspicion, you know, of fraud or someone hacking into the system, then it will reduce the legitimacy of the result of that election. That's why when it comes to election, all election management bodies like EC are extremely cautious when it comes to using technology, even though it's there. So it's about, I think, dealing with the process properly. But even this process of big snail mail, I think there's room to be improved. For example, there's no reason why they should post from Malaysia to the overseas country. Singapore is nearby. What if you live in Africa? You know, I mean, you can forget a 14-day campaign period for you to vote. But why can't EC just then allow you to download the PDF of the ballot, for example? You know, the details are there. You don't have to print on paper. In Singapore or Africa, you download the PDF of your ballot paper. You can mark it and then post it. So that saved at least several days, the postal service.
Time is really the constraint here. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Appreciate your time. Thomas Fano, Bursa 2.0 there. We're going to take a quick break and come back, discuss more on this topic. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Shraddha and I on Consider This. The Johor State elections will be significant as it will be the first election to implement the Undi 18 constitutional amendment. Undi Johor, which is a non-partisan initiative under the Undi 18 and Undi Negaraku umbrella, was set up in a bid to strengthen the democratic empowerment among Johorian youth. Kira Yusri, co-founder and education director of Undi 18, joins us now. Kira, let's talk about Undi Johor. They recently launched Ops Undi Johor, The point of it was to address what they described as, quote, gaps left by the inefficiency of the Election Commission, end quote. I want to start there. Can you elaborate this comment? Where do you see these gaps? Yeah.
I knew that line was going to come back at me. So thanks again for having me. I think the idea is that, you know, Election Commission is responsible for not just looking into ways to hold election and to execute elections, but to also ensuring that elections are safe, voting is accessible, and also, you know, many, many others as well. In the context of the Johor state election, prior to the Ops Uni Johor launch, we actually made four main demands to the Election Commission. The first one being allowing voters to come back and vote, especially in countries like Singapore, allowing voters in Sabah and Sarawak to either vote early or to do postal voting, allowing students to vote on campuses, or worst come to worst, allowing overseas voters to vote at embassies or consulates, right? And none of these demands were being heard. I think we were being very optimistic as well when we made those demands. So, you know, when we heard, when the EC made the announcement for the Johor state elections, not only none of these demands were taken into account, in fact, they did not change any procedures from the past few state elections. Bear in mind, this is the fourth state election ever since the COVID. You know, we had Sabah, we had Malacca, we had Sarawak, and yet not much has changed. You know, I think one good thing is that they now allow Malaysians in Brunei, Singapore, Southern Thailand and Kalimantan, Indonesia to do postal voting. But even then, the date to register as a postal voter is way too short. The deadline is the 18th of February, when the nomination day is, you know, is like 1 week after that or 1.5 weeks after that. So it makes no sense for the EC to put in such restrictions. And Undi Johor wants to, one, raise awareness on these issues, but also trying to see what we can do to ensure as many people vote as possible.
So Kira, you're not particularly diplomatic, and that's probably refreshing, I think, in under current circumstances. So let me carry on in that vein, right? So what is it that's going on with the EC? Do you think it's just institutional inertia, or is there a sense that you know, that they don't really see themselves in the business of being inclusive, of wanting greater participation? I mean, whatever the lip service they give, that's not really what they're interested in.
Yeah, I mean, far from me to speak on behalf of them, but in my experience in Undi 18, you know, we try to advocate for inclusive access to elections and voting, as you know. And I think our efforts to engage the EC to have discussions and consultations often, you know, fall on deaf ears, to the point where, you know, when we had to go to court last year to even get our message across, right? So I think, I'm not sure what's exactly going on or what they've actually been working on for the past 2 years, you know, under this new leadership of Dato' Sri Abdul Ghani. But I think there's so much gaps in our EC reform that, you know, groups like Bersih have been pushing for ages, you know, groups like Tindak have been working on for the past decade on issues of electoral reform, and yet they are not being heard. So I think for someone like me who's, you know, still fairly new in the scene, and to see that, you know, the inactiveness and the unresponsiveness, I think it just begs the question, what are you doing up there? Why is it so slow? Why are the safety of you know, Malaysians going out to vote not a concern for them? You know, I think I was one of the monitors. I was monitoring the Malacca elections a few months ago. And, you know, there were some changes. You know, for example, if you were under quarantine or if you were COVID positive, there's a separate tent for you to vote and all that. But the SOPs for those came out the day before the elections. You know, how is people supposed to prepare and even know what to do? You know, you cannot assume that everyone just follows EC on social media or, you know, keep in touch. It is the EC's responsibility to make sure they educate and engage the wider public on issues like this. But, you know, so far we don't see any of this from them. You know, right. I really wish the media could ask them this question, but I heard they're not taking questions, so I don't know.
If we get the opportunity, believe us, we would. Kira, you know, so it's down to initiatives like Undi Johor and many other NGOs that are picking up the slack from the EC and trying to get the message across, trying to get communication out. Can you tell us a little bit about what Undi Johor is doing? Because I understand that there's the Pulang Mengundi initiative. There's also a discussion about an effort to transport postal ballots from Singapore to Johor. Is that correct?
Yes. So I think we're doing primarily two things, two initiatives under Ops Undi Johor. The first one being knowing that many Johorian youth, especially students and young professionals, are residing outside of Johor and may not have the resources to come back and vote, especially after Chinese New Year. You know, you took your leave from your boss, like, you know, they're going to be like, oh, you know, you can't just take leave again. So we're trying to fundraise to subsidize travel costs for these people. They can apply in a range of 50 to 250 ringgit, depending where they're traveling from. So we're trying to crowdfund that as well. The second initiative, which is a bit more ambitious, taking inspiration from the initiatives like Undi Rabu before this, you know, we want to work with Malaysians in Singapore to, you know, volunteers to collect these ballots and bring it over to Johor before elections, you know. So that's why it's so important for us that we're trying to ramp up the campaign of postal voting. This is so that people can register as a postal voter and receive their ballots in time to cast their votes. And then, you know, if it all goes to plan, we can actually bring the votes back and make sure their votes are accounted for. Because many times in our experiences of observing elections, sometimes the ballots arrive 1 or 2 days before elections. And, you know, you can't just hope that, you know, the postal service is so incredibly efficient to get it over within 24 hours. We're also trying to work with students in the UK to see, you know, if they can transport the votes back or to ramp up the awareness on postal voting. Because for many people, they, even though they know that they are now automatically registered voters, they may not know that they have to register as a postal voter, which is, again, one more layer of bureaucracy for people to just participate in our democracy.
Akira, I understand that there might be safety concerns or security concerns, rather, over these ballots that are being transported. They're not transported by the right people and so on and so forth. But I want to leave that aside. The remaining time that we have, I really want to ask you, we put a lot of pressure on the EC to do things, but there's also a responsibility that each individual citizen has. I wonder if that message has gone out to young people. Young people, in your sense of it, are they enthusiastic about exercising their franchise and casting their vote? Are they?
Yeah, so I think, of course, there's an individual responsibility to vote as well. But I also think fundamentally, it's like many factors that comes in play, right? On EC, on the government institution side, to educate people on their rights and their privileges, but in political parties to actually woo the people to come out and vote. Because one of the primary concerns, I think, especially among young people, is that many of them probably don't want to care about politics because the level of apathy they have is so high thanks to the distrust of our political institutions and our politicians, right? Because what's stopping politicians from party hopping after winning a seat? And I think because of that, and you see the petty argument that politicians have on social media, which young people are primarily on, will probably turn off many young people. So of course, you know, for Undi 18, we're trying our best to combat this by engaging them and by creating media campaigns to highlight the importance of this particular state election, because it's not just one seat, right? It's 56 seats and it will determine the government of Johor for the next 5 years. But it's, I have to admit, it's very challenging to overcome or tackle political apathy, especially when there's no mechanisms like recall elections to stop our politicians or party hopping easily, you know. So I think this will be one of the demands or main concerns of young people when it comes to elections and participating in the upcoming elections. So hopefully they'll make the demands clear to the candidates, and hopefully we'll be able to see these concerns addressed after nomination day when we know who is running, and we'll be able to know what ideas or issues they'll be bringing forward for the state elections.
Kira, I want to ask you, the kind of last minute we have, the issue that a lot of observers and perhaps some naysayers have, that say basically this is a generation who are very active on social media, but not necessarily in the real world. And so, you know, and when you look at how analog the system is set up, I mean, it's bewildering even for someone from my generation, the post-war generation. How much of a struggle is it going to be to get people to, you know, jump through all these hoops to participate?
So I think it's definitely a real concern of whether, you know, talks on social media and social media presence will translate offline. I think the best people to experiment with this is actually, you know, MUDA, the brand new youth party, right? Because they have an amazing following online, but we'll see whether it will translate offline. I think that's what makes this election so particularly exciting, right? We'll be able to see for the first time the trends, whether it's high or low, whether, you know, youth vote one way or another, are they as, can we generalize the youth vote as many commentators have been doing so far, or are they really diverse and we just can't figure them out? You know, I don't have all the answers, but I think this particular election, we'll be able to see those trends, and we'll be able to sort of like pull data and sentiments to make sense of what could possibly happen in general elections. Whether, you know, whether these online votes will translate offline, I think it varies, right? I think because it's complicated to say, because it's a state election, not a national election. When young people came together to do community service during the floods, I think almost 90% of it was based on social media sentiment and social media mobilization. Same with the protests that we did during Lawan. But those are national issues and national platforms where, you know, it's not necessarily in local or subnational context. So it's a bit hard to compare. But I think this is right. Where the candidates have to figure it out, you know? Yeah.
Kira, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Kira Yusri of Undi 18 wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.